I am delighted to have Kim Brophy back on the show. She and I talked about whether you can judge books by their cover and whether the breed of dogs, which was a study that came out, is going to tell you something or nothing about how they're going to behave. That study said it wasn't going to tell you anything. And Kim Brophy knows better. She's an applied ethologist, a professional dog trainer, and she's created the Family Dog Mediation website that teaches dog trainers, I would say, in my opinion, how to be better dog trainers, smarter dog trainers, and more aware dog trainers. But now she has launched Meet Your Dog, which is a most gorgeous online filmed version of the ideas that she's had about the different ways that different types of dogs behave and can be expected to behave. Kim, it was so marvelous watching The Dog's Truth because it told me things with adjectives that you use that I kind of subliminally knew, but no one had really put words to it. So if someone has a sporting dog or a hunting dog, the things that you can expect them to do and the things you can expect them not to do, and consider them still their own natural selves and not expect them to come when called if they're chasing, I don't know, the rabbit or whatever it is that they were originally bred to do. I'm sure that your creation of this beautiful video series, which is a series, it's a course, came out of frustration of people trying to turn border collies into chihuahuas, if you will, in terms of lifestyle. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, there's just so much to the story, kind of going back to our conversation that we had last time about the actual study. And, there's so many things that are a very important element contributing to any given dog's behavior, right? And yes. And we as a culture have been told that it's just all how you raise them. And basically we've homogenized all of this incredible genetic diversity that was so carefully artificially selected into yes. all the kinds of breeds that we have. And, you know, I think people, of course, tend to be very oversimplistic in terms of their assessment of things. And that's just a phenomenon. All humans, you know, we have the tendency to do that. And we kind of go back and forth both between these polarities of, are genes predictive? Do they tell us exactly how the dog's going to behave? Or is it all how you raise them? And of course, it's neither. It's both. It's the interaction of all these things. And you have variation genetically, even within a particular group or even within a breed of dogs or even a line of dogs. Of yes. course, there's going to be differences in variation. But it is important for people to have a sense of what kinds of things dogs were so carefully bred to exhibit or not exhibit over the course of centuries and millennia, because those things very much can and will pop up in many cases in dogs living in pet home conditions. And people might be, you know, beating their head against a wall, wondering what's wrong with the dog. Is my dog broken or did I fail to train it correctly? When the reality is that they're just maybe experiencing or witnessing behaviors that were so carefully bred into our dogs. And the real problem is the modern environment and the captivity environment being so incompatible with the things that we've bred dogs to do historically. So if we're really going to be compassionate and accept and love them for who they are, we have to accept and love them for all of who they are and, frankly, what we made them to be.
That's a really good point. You use the phrase captive animals. There's you talking during the course, and then fabulous footage. I can't even imagine the amount of time, money, and energy it took you to get all this footage of various types of dogs. All of them are, each chapter, if you will, of the course focuses on a different, whether it's a toy dog or whether it's a sight hound. And we have now made them captive animals. And, you know, we feel sorry for animals in the zoo. Now we feel less mm-hmm. sorry for them because now we've extinguished them in the wild. So now they're the last living version in the zoo. It's all so confusing. But we're supposed yeah. to feel, if you will, if we're empathetic and species empathetic, really bad for that poor lion behind the plexiglass or the gorilla behind the bars or the giraffe mm-hmm. who can only walk like 2 feet in each direction. And we've turned our dogs into the same captive animals. And as you say in a great part of The Dog's Truth, but we think we're doing great by them because look, nice place to sleep, nice lunch. Wow, really cute outfit I got them. Hey, mm-hmm. I took them for a walk around the block. And mm-hmm. I think that the compassion that comes from watching this, and it's not, although of course each grouping of dogs are purebred and they're, and the breeds are mentioned, and therefore it's kind of reminiscent of watching a dog show on TV. The difference is the dog show on TV has hidden messages about how useless that breed of dog would be to live in a small apartment where you're gone 11 hours of the day. But they never say that in the dog show. They say, this is a dog who really enjoys the outdoors, or a dog who is completely untrainable. And in our sense, and you show these fabulous Siberian Huskies and these others, independent dogs, you know, bred for like till from the cave times to be smart and reliant and bring us dinner and save us from the wolves at the door. And you're told, eh, they're a little strong-minded. No, they actually are not going to want to do what you want them to do. They're built to not want that. They're built to be independent. And you use these great adjectives that are never pejorative, but very descriptive. You know, you just, you have a great use of adjectives about these various kinds of dogs. And I think it's, even to me, who immerses herself in all things dog and also cat all the time, there was a lot of eye-openers about the idea that these dogs, each of these kinds of dogs, not only as individuals, because there are many different Borzois, not all Borzois act the same, or Scottish Deerhound, but we have to have more realistic expectations. And I think that's almost the guiding principle of what makes people happy in life, whether it's a marriage, a job, a child, or a pet. What is the realistic expectation you should have about who that animal will be and how they will fit into your life? Or, oh, hey, wait, how you could make their life more genuine for them, more real, more appropriate. Yeah. And I felt myself brought to tears a couple of times thinking, wow, that's like rotten. That is like, we all know border collies is like the perfect example of a dog not to live in an apartment, a dog not to live in a stupid suburban life. Well, it's stupid to the border collie, so I can use that word. The border collie needs, you know, thousands of acres and flocks of sheep or the equivalent, whether it's ducks or sheep or something to do its job. I feel really bad for them because it's really, as you say, in the dog's truth, lots of square pegs, round holes, and we keep trying to shove them in there. I think that there are a lot of professional dog trainers. You have already more than 1,000 who've become family dog mediator, which is your word for dog trainer. I love the word. It's great. It's like, how do you mediate between these two species? They're trying all day long to try and understand us and this life we want to give them. We don't really try very hard. We see dogs as the dog, the pet. As you say, you don't even like the word pet, do you?
No, I mean, it's not that it's not true, because, right, we've definitely made them pets. So it's not that it's inaccurate. I think you hit the nail on the head a moment ago talking about expectations. And I begin and end the book that way for a reason, you know, is because, just like you said, if we go into any relationship with any being, be it human or animal, with expectations that are just left field for what they can bring to the table, then we're starting in failure. You know, and that's so unfair to a person. It's so unfair to a dog. It's so unfair to an animal living in captivity in a zoo to say, well, come on, polar bear, why can't you hack it in the tropical enclosure? Like, what's your problem? Get on board here, you know? It's like, well,
look, I give you some fish. Enjoy.
That's right. Let's, they may be tropical fish, but it's fine. But it's, it doesn't actually work for them because of these cornerstone concepts that are true for all species of a phenotype, a niche to a habitat. And we just act like none of this applies to dogs. And, you know, it's interesting. We're getting some heat in the industry, all of which has been expected. And, you know, we're quite experienced with it from the last decade or so of putting this stuff out there for why are you talking so much about genetics? And it's like, well, a couple of reasons, right? One is nobody has been and somebody needs to. And really, if we're going to talk about loving our dogs, if we're going to talk about being kind to them and compassionate, and we say we have an interest in their welfare, we understand from all other species that the starting point of the provision for that welfare is a habitat that actually resembles their natural habitat and has what's called the affordances for them to express natural behaviors and be what they're biologically designed to be. So we kind of can't really dig into the meat of the other stuff if we don't talk about that square peg in a round hole, key to a lock issue first. It's not that it's more important. It's just that it's it's kind of the step one, which is
it's the foundation. Yes.
It's the foundation, right? And then all of the other things have their equal weight as they come into that animal's life experience. But if we're wrong from the step one, if our expectations are off, if we're trying to say, hey, look, you're a pet, and we define them by their purpose for us, mm-hmm. to bring us joy and comfort and fun and exercise or whatever else we visualize, and we're not coming to have a reality check with, well, wait a minute. Who are they? What is mm-hmm. the complexity of their beingness? And how do we have to meet that halfway? And that's why we like that mediation model. Then we're not being authentic. We're not being fair. And our expectations are going to be off, and we're going to experience the behavior problems that, frankly, are symptomatic of a dysfunction between the environment and the genetics. Behavior problems are exhibitive of that.
That's a really good point. And you use the word Umwelt in the video, mm-hmm. which is a word that I had not really heard until Alexander Horowitz uses it in mm-hmm. a couple of her books. And people are very mm-hmm. like into, oh, Alexander Horowitz's books are great. I get it. The dog's nose, and we can really understand it deeply, how that's it affects their experience of the world. Because that doesn't make us bad owners. That doesn't right. make us selfish. It doesn't make us mindless, which we are with a lot of our dogs, because it isn't
sadly,
just their nose, people. It's where they right. want to sleep and how they want to sleep and what do they want to do in their waking hours. And is a plastic puzzle with some food bits in it going to like fulfill it? Well, it's sure better than nothing. But have you really understood that it's not just a way to kind of keep the two-year-old busy by giving them an iPhone, which you see people doing? Is that really
right.
going to make that a good human later? Is that going to, you know, prepare them for the human world?
Your point is really, really good. And it's interesting because I think a lot of the things that we're really trying to do through enrichment, through a lot of great intentions, are like, okay, great in comparison to nothing.
Yes.
But they're so far off the mark for our kids and for our dogs, right? So, it's one of the reasons we're so happy that we're now partnering with SniffSpot, is because SniffSpot is a meaningful new solution in the modern age, Airbnb for rentable private dog yards, right? And whole acres and pastures and forests.
Oh, cool.
Where you can go let your dog run free. Oh, it's amazing. That is a actual tangible, meaningful solution, like above so many other things, that is going to have a more profound benefit, because we have to put them back in their element, not say, well, this will kind of, you know, take enough of an edge off
right.
to help you just
to make
today.
Them more manageable when the Prozac
right.
doesn't work. You know, but before
right.
we run out of time, I just want to say that while it focuses on groups of purebred dogs and people that have mutts or crossbred dogs, I don't mean designer crossbred like, you know, mm-hmm. the Labradoodle. I mean, ones they've gotten from a shelter with no known background, you mm-hmm. know, by looking at them, probably what their mixture is. You can do the DNA thing, which myself experienced with various mutts I've had, didn't tell me anything, me personally. Some people like it. I know you think the DNA test can be okay, but I think it's more important to understand. You talk about the world dog, and we don't have much time left, but for anyone who thinks, oh, this is snobby, it's just about purebred dogs. First of all, people are buying purebred dogs all the time because they like the look of a dog. It reminds them of their childhood. Everybody who's rescuing from shelters is often getting a purebred dog too. A third of the dogs in there are discarded mm-hmm. because people didn't understand what the dog's truth would have told them had they seen mm-hmm. it. But the world dog is fascinating when you bring it up. It isn't just various mutts, like random crossbreds from, let's say, Georgia or Mississippi. It's the dogs being brought in from abroad who are mm-hmm. scavenger dogs who live in the street. Mm-hmm. I know someone that a dog was brought in from Egypt, and they're trying to get that dog to live with them. And that dog was like living around the pyramids. They're asking yeah. probably more of that dog than that dog can possibly do. And your empathy in the dog's truth to the stressors for a dog who could live free and independently being asked to live in confinement that close with people, with everything being managed for them, and them not being able to make any independent decisions, which is how they survived. It's a great point. And even if, you know, it didn't affect anybody's dog right now watching it, it gives you so much a depth of understanding and compassion for where these dogs came from, whether it's in their genes or in their early life or in the home that they had or the home they never had. It's mm-hmm. marvelous, Kim. It really mm-hmm. forces people to stop and think, ooh, they're not all just one thing, dogs. There's so many yeah. things. and making the right relationship with the one you have, or choosing one that has the best chance of success with you, is vitally important.
It is. It's really important. And, you know, it's just, we need to evolve, right? The conversation.
Yes.
And that's what all
yes.
this is about. It's the
that's
beginning
right.
of a conversation. It's not the end.
Yes.
And that's why we're just really hopeful that more people will find out what the conversation is about and participate in it, whether they take the course themselves or they attend one of the free public events that our Family Dog Mediators will be having around the world to show the Dog's Truth course. And, you know, they can have an opportunity to ask questions there. But, you know, we need to evolve. We are a culture of dog lovers. Clearly, we'll continue to invest in them in so many ways, but we need to put the right step first, which is recognizing that they are biological animals and they are struggling in the 21st century.
Definitely. And we're struggling with them, and we think the fault is either theirs or ours. It's simply about not understanding what it's ignorance. It's pure ignorance. Mm. It's not understanding who that individual is based on them as an individual. And as you point out with your wonderful system of legs, where they came from, and what they're pre-programmed to be and to do. I think it's terrific. I think that if people are looking for a dog trainer, and boy, there's so many mediocre ones out there, and I'm saying that word very politely, expensive, costly, useless, and often just misguided, familydogmediation.com has a directory of everyone who's taken the course to think differently about dogs. And
the licensed members anyway.
The licensed ones. And then they may be showing the Dog's Truth in the community as a way for people to understand a new way of thinking and maybe become clients. We've run out of time, Kim Brophy. What you're doing is great. And as you said, we must continue the conversation. It's really interesting and everybody needs to be part of it. Thank you for what you're doing to disrupt the current ideas and help us all to be better dog owners and better people.
Thank you.